Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. My panel today, Kieran O'Donnell, Fine Gael TD for Limerick City and Chair of the Oireachtas Committee on Transport and Communications Networks, Martin Kenny, Sinn Féin TD for Sligo Leitrim and Spokesperson on Justice and Equality, and Verona Murphy, Independent TD for Wexford. You can text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie or tweet to @SaturdayRTE. Now, the Taoiseach has admitted that meeting the target of 1.25 million doses of vaccine delivered in March is going to be very challenging. Given what we saw in the last week, Kieran O'Donnell, 82,000 doses administered when we'd been, you know, initially projecting 100,000, and what we're hearing of the projections for next week, the idea that the 1.25 million doses is very challenging is a bit of a euphemism, really, for we haven't a hope in hell of getting there, do we?
It's very challenging. The AstraZeneca vaccine, they've missed deadlines, three deadlines in recent times. That has proved very challenging. Really, in terms of the rollout, it's all down now to the restrictions around supply. But I think the vaccine story is still a very good story.
It wasn't just supply issues in the last week, though. I mean, there was certainly a lot of other logistical problems that emerged in terms of deliveries not getting to GPs when they were promised. And that has dented confidence in the HSC's ability to do the much greater rollout that's on the way.
I would say there was bumps along the road, but nevertheless, this weekend, we'll see virtually 99% of the vaccines to be administered by the GPs to over 85s administered. We'll have seen over 500 vaccines given by this weekend. And we're seeing that the vaccine itself is kicking in, where we're seeing major reductions in the level of cases amongst the people in nursing homes, frontline workers. And as of today, just announced by Paul Reid, the head of the HSC, we've now less than 100 people in ICU. That's a real, real positive 99 people. So we're moving in the right direction. Yes, targets are challenging, but nevertheless, I expect that you'll see a major rollout of the vaccine in April. And I think the challenge then is to ensure that we can get people vaccinated properly. I think we are geared up for that.
Yeah,
Martin Kenny.
I think, you know, we all want to see this work. Everybody wants the vaccine rolled out as quickly as possible to as many places as possible. And while we understand there are some problems with getting the vaccine, that's the main problem here. But there are also serious issues with logistics, with getting it from when it arrives in the country into the hands of the GPs and into the people out there that are needing it. I know in my area, in North Leitrim and West Cavan, there are people over 85s that haven't received their vaccine yet. Loads of them. And even my own mother has been booked for next Thursday to get her, and she's almost 89 years old. So, you know, there are a lot of problems out there. And, you know, we don't want to be critical for the sake of being critical. What we want to do is we want to work together to ensure that we get this delivered as fast as possible to as many people as possible, because at the end of the day, the root out of this problem is making sure that we get this vaccine rollout right and do it right.
I don't think I should be lost sight of the fact, except with your mother, but we're talking about 1,300 GP practices, where we're talking at this stage that there's just 65 haven't rolled out the vaccine. That will happen next week, and your mother will get her vaccine next week.
I understand that.
And we're talking about 850 out of about 72,000. All done in the last 2 weeks.
There are also people who are homebound who can't get the vaccine at all. And there has been nothing done for those. I have loads of people who have been on to me where they can't go to the GP because they're bedbound. They can't get out of their home. And there has been no provision put in place yet. In the next week,
we're moving into cohort 4, which is for people that have specific illness between 16 and 69.
We're talking about the over 85s who haven't been able to avail of the GP vaccination.
Paul Reid has stated that there are 850 over 85s that will have to get the vaccine next week. That involves 65 practices out of 1,300, and it involves 850 over 85s out of 72,000.
Okay, let me bring in Verona, Verona Murphy. Verona, what are you hearing on the ground in Wexford?
Well, I'm getting all the same calls that you hear Martin getting. I mean, I have many 85-year-olds who haven't been contacted. They've contacted their GP. The GP hasn't received the vaccine, has no idea when they're going to receive it, and it's a significant issue. On Thursday, Katie, in the Dáil, there were over 200 GPs, were the statements made, that hadn't received vaccines. Yesterday, we saw Dr. Nina Burns tweet that she had received the vaccine with no syringes or needles. And these are vaccines that are time sensitive in you know, we know that there's a timeline on them, and the rollout of the logistical managing of the rollout seems to be catastrophic. It's just chaotic. But what I would say is, yes, we are living in hope. But on Thursday, what you saw from Minister Donnelly on questions and answers in relation to the vaccine rollout was, it seemed to be his only strategy in answering questions was attack being the best form of defence. He was accusing deputies of using disgraceful language, particularly Deputy Catherine Connolly, who actually relayed what a doctor had said. And the words were, he was at the end of his tether. She received an onslaught from the minister. It is just not good enough. GPs are contacting our constituency offices saying that they have no direct line to the HSE. When they do phone up, they get a call centre in Waterford or a call centre in Galway, and there is no direct contact. They have no direct link to be able to understand what they can tell their patients. Now, the reality is, we are a country that is following the EU slavishly. Denmark is a country the same population size of Ireland, and they have rolled out the vaccine almost entirely. Now, this is important. Almost 29% of people in Northern Ireland have been vaccinated, compared to 6% in the south. Okay. Just let me point out that we are hinging all our hopes on the vaccine. And I'd like to know what the logistical issues are, because the questions we're asking in relation to it are not being answered.
Can I just circle points? Verona, in Denmark, the rate is rising at the moment, unlike here. Secondly, in terms of the north, right, Ireland, in the republic element of the island, we have a higher number of people have got second doses versus the Northern Ireland. Our rate in terms of
fresh are lower. You're not suggesting we're ahead of the Northern Ireland.
No, I'm just saying that, just to put it in context.
Well,
right?
let me put it in context, because the government continually denies this point.
There's no point in us shouting over each other.
Well, I'm not shouting over you. If you want it in context, I'll give it to you.
No, I want to answer one point you've raised.
Denmark has been closed for 15 days. Denmark has been closed for 15 days. In the same context, Ireland and Ireland's government have had this country closed for 170 days. It's no wonder.
Can I just come back on the GPs, right? And Verona made reference to earlier. Yes, there have been, in my view, not as good a communication with the GP that should be happening. I'd hope that's now rectified. They've put extra people in place at each local level. But I think what really our system here is about ensuring that we've put a safe, effective and a fair system in place for a vaccination rollout programme. Yes, we've had problems with supplies, but I think what we're now going to find is, hopefully, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be approved by the EMA next week. And I think what we're really gearing up, and the Taoiseach was in Galway yesterday, they're looking at a centre there that will do 3,000 a day. So I think we're very much now in the space with over nearly 10,000 people in place to administer the vaccines, that I think this is a very good news story.
To support that view, we've got a text in here from Mary in Dublin. I have five elderly relatives from 85 to 95 years of age in Cork, Waterford and Wexford, and they have all been vaccinated, says Mary.
It's still difficult for people
balance.
Who haven't been vaccinated. Okay, I accept that.
Let me bring in Stephen McMahon from the Irish Patients Association. Stephen, you've been listening to our debate there. How would you rate the rollout at this point?
Well, I think the first thing we have to look at is the fact that as of last night, 4,405 people have died as a result of COVID, and we have over 222,000 people actually had COVID, and hopefully most of those have all recovered by now. The issue here is that we're sort of in a bubble in Ireland where we're looking constantly at the numbers that we're hearing about what we're doing. And we need to be looking further afield within Europe, because it's in Europe that those deals to get those supplies have been done. They were negotiated by the Commission, and they are sort of coordinated from the point of view of the deliveries as a proportion of population. I did a quick look just for a quick start, Katie, there this morning. As per ECDC, Ireland has now had 16.3 doses distributed per 100 people. Versus Denmark, 16.4. So we're in fifth now at the moment, which was an increase from yesterday. And it looks like that we got something in the region according to these numbers. And this is the problem. It's very hard to get the hard facts. It would look like that we got something in the region of about 123,000 additional doses between yesterday and today that seem to be available. But the real charge here is that, you know, we need to be working at this together to understand the system needs to be more transparent in its communication process.
Because you have written directly to the Commission. So to explain, what were you asking them?
Well, basically what we were trying to do was to see the stewardship and oversight of the deals that were done with the companies that are providing the vaccines, to see that, one, that there was equity in the distribution proportionate to population, and to see what the planned deliveries were going forward. And basically, we were quite taken a surprise, really, in the reply that we received earlier this week, where it said, and I quote, the Commission is not in a position to disclose the number of doses allocated to individual countries, in this case Ireland, and we're also not able to disclose the number of doses actually delivered to a specific country. Now, they further go on, which is of major concern to the Irish Patient Association, I'm sure many of your listeners, that the Commission is looking after that contractual obligations are fulfilled. It is in this respect to be noted that some member states may wish not to purchase all the doses allocated to them, while others may wish to order more. Member states are free to redistribute doses between them. And really, if we start that amongst all of the member states of doing side deals and all sorts of stuff, it's going to undermine the solidarity that was needed to actually get these vaccines. And we'll have all sorts of cross deals happening. And we find that, you know, that the what we would call the vaccine mountain, that anything that's not used should be returned to the Commission, and that it should be shared in accordance with the population guidelines that they've already agreed. And this is something, indeed, that they, we see that the Minister is talking about writing next week. But we would be saying that this is so important, it should be dealt with over the weekend, and disturb perhaps President Van der Leer's Sunday lunch with this important development.
Just in relation to that, because that's being reported today, that we're Ireland is among a number of countries that are pressing for formalised approach to redistributing surplus vaccines in the EU.
Well, the Taoiseach was out yesterday where he said we had made contact with countries like Germany who said they were using their vaccine. I don't think the issue is supply within the EU. I think the issue is supply from the suppliers. And I think what really needs to happen now is that, and going back to Stephen's point in terms of the precise nature of the deals with the suppliers.
That report, that there is some initiative underway on that.
The Department of Health are looking at ways of working with other countries, but I think very much in the spirit of cooperation within the EU.
What are we asking for?
What we're asking is to ensure that all supplies of vaccines that come in with the EU are used in the most efficient way possible to ensure that there aren't situations where maybe that there's surplus stock in one country over another. The Taoiseach is stating yesterday.
Just want to clarify here. Who is calling for this? What countries are behind
the countries being reported calling for it are Denmark, Lithuania, Latvia and Slovakia.
Right. And we want any surpluses distributed as per population,
I think it's coming from the Department of Health, but I think the Taoiseach was out yesterday stating that we have made contact with various countries. So it's not as straightforward as, we'll say, redistribution within the EU. I think it's also
have we been quietly going around using our, through our embassies or some other way, contacting other EU countries and saying any chance
I would
of
say
a few vaccines?
I'd say in the normal way in terms of engagement with our European partners. Like, the vaccines are coming into Europe collectively operating in Europe. So I think that's unusual, right? I think we should be doing that.
Okay.
But I think the most important thing at the moment from now on is that security of supply from the suppliers of the vaccine. And the AstraZeneca is a huge problem.
I'll come to you in one moment, but just in relation to that, there's a report that it was referred to as this vaccine bazaar. And is that a formal thing, or is that just a phrase to indicate?
Well, it looked to me like it was a phrase used as a commentator in terms of dealing with it. But I think.
But it said that the Taoiseach said that we asked for 2 million out of this whatever this process is, and we ended up with 168,000.
Yeah, but I'm not privy to the details of it. All I know at this stage is that there's a European model in place which is really to ensure security of supply. And we have one particular company at the moment, AstraZeneca, who are very much running behind, not only with Ireland, but other countries as well. And I think this has to be done in a European-wide basis to ensure that there is security. But I can just make, the positive side here. If the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is approved next week by the EMA, that will bring another stream of vaccines into Ireland. And we're ready to very much do serious mass vaccinations in the month of April.
Are there any arrangements being made right now to ensure that we have supplies of that vaccine in place, ready to go the moment we get the approval from the EU?
I would expect that there are discussions ongoing between the government and Department of Health on this particular issue. But it has to be approved first. They're one of the companies that Ireland has, through Europe, collectively negotiated a contract of supply with. Once they're approved by the EMA. And can I say, we're looking at vaccinating 1 million people per week in the month of April. That's very positive.
I want to bring in Billy Kelleher, Fianna Fáil MEP, Billy Kelleher. Billy, going back to what Stephen McMahon was saying in relation to his contacts with the Commission and this shroud of secrecy really around what deliveries are arriving and what deliveries are being dispatched to various countries. Why the secrecy around this?
Well, look, I mean, it was the criticism that a lot of us made before Christmas last year. I mean, we do need to ensure that there would have been openness and transparency in terms of the contracts. That was a big concern initially.
But
when
it's not
we started
happening.
Well, that's the point, because, I mean, some companies are saying, well, look, I mean, contracts are, you know, drawn up between two parties. They weren't agreed initially to be published. So there is redacted contracts, you know, laid before the Parliament regularly, but you can't get the detail. And then on top of that, I mean, we don't have country by country reporting in terms of the number of vaccines that actually go to each country. And of course, member states are not necessarily clamouring for that particular information, because there might be concerns that if the information flow shows that they're getting more vaccines than they're using, well, then it creates a political difficulty in member states. Bear in mind, Germany last week had 2.4 million vaccines unused, you know, as of last week. So, I mean, some countries have more vaccines than they can administer. Other countries like Ireland, which are waiting for vaccines on a weekly basis, they could certainly do with more to challenge our administration to get them into people's arms, in other words. But I think that the next couple of weeks will prove very decisive in terms of the rollout of the vaccine and confidence building among the public. Companies are beginning to ramp up production capabilities. And then the next question will be, well, can the health systems in Ireland and across the European Union actually administer as quickly as they get? And that's going to be the next big challenge. So it's supply at the moment, but within a matter of weeks, supply will not be the issue.
Billy, I think we're very much set up for that. In that,
yeah, but
in 37 centres,
I don't want to be having a big debate with you about it. I mean, I'm not saying we're not. I'm just saying that will be the next big challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
The challenge at the moment is we don't have
enough
vaccines.
Well, let's stick with the challenge at the moment.
At the moment, the challenge is that we haven't had a pre-planning in regard to all this. This is really where it's fallen down, that every time something comes up, we run around, what are we going to do now? There hasn't been pre-planning as to how we are going to get additional vaccines from other countries in Europe if there is surplus there. There isn't pre-planning if we do get, if Johnson & Johnson comes on board, that we're going to be able to deal with it. Because I've come across situations on the ground where there are GP practices and where there are places where they can't get the capacity for to administer the vaccine, even if they did come in large quantities of it at the moment. So, you know, really a lot of this is down to the logistics and to how we're working it all out. And really that's the criticism I think that most people have. The expectations are raised very high, now we're falling short, and now we're running around to see what we're going to do about it.
I think it's a fair comment, Martin. If the vaccine comes,
I want to let Verona Murphy
say, you know, we're well behind the curve here. I mean, we knew that the Germans and the French were not going to roll out the AstraZeneca vaccine to the over 65s. Yet, as a country, we allowed them to hoard over 1 million vaccines each. We didn't look for that supply. Now that they've decided they are going to vaccinate the over 65s, we've decided to look for the supply. This government is behind the curve at all times to the detriment of the people. And what I would say, where Ciarán's information is coming from, I just don't know, because I've asked in a PQ how many vaccinators we do have. We have fully qualified professional nurses in Wexford offering their time to give the vaccine to be told that they need to do 30 hours training. By the way, I have not received the information as to how many vaccinators we do have. And this is beginning to sound and look very much like our testing and tracing system, which in the end, we heard all of the right language, but the system collapsed. And that's my serious concern here. The vaccination rollout is heading for a collapse.
Can I just make one comment here? As it stands at the moment, Paul Reid is on record as saying the vaccine is administered to the public within a week of the vaccine arriving. That's the standard. And furthermore,
Without syringes arriving with it.
And there are cases where that has happened and it should not have happened. It nevertheless, and I'm not in any way reducing the impact it has on people like Martin's mother, but the point I'm trying to make is that generally the rollout of vaccine is being rolled out in an efficient manner,
Kieran,
based on the number of vaccines coming in.
And there's 6% of vaccine rolled out in Southern Ireland versus 29% in Northern Ireland.
It's a different context, Verona. With due respect, Kieran, our model is based around a second dose. We're well ahead of the North and the second
Well, then
dose.
We'll use Denmark as the model, because ultimately we are so far behind the curve. If you look at Denmark, and we're constantly been told about Denmark, so let's look at it in the vaccination rollout sphere. They are so far ahead of us. Many countries in Europe have decided not to give the second vaccine, to roll out the first vaccination. We can't even get the first vaccination.
Our model has worked in that regard. We've seen a reduction in the risk groups, the over 85s,
and in nursing homes and in healthcare workers.
Kieran, if the model was working,
we
wouldn't be discussing this problem if the model was working.
Exactly.
The reason we're here is because the model isn't working.
If there's an acknowledgement of that, then we can move forward. The supply is not arriving the efficient manner that we would like. I think that will very much see, coming into the month of April, we'll have large supplies of vaccine arriving. The likes of Johnson aren't getting approval. And I think
we've missed for two consecutive weeks the vaccine deadlines, the targets. We've missed them. I am not as confident as you. And what I'm asking here
is half a million doses administered by this weekend already.
For the people. We need to see a transparent rollout. We need to understand the problems if people are to have confidence.
Okay, can I bring Billy Kelleher back into the conversation? Billy, in relation to that initiative that we were talking about, this bizarre vaccine bazaar, and attempts to have some sort of a formal setup for redistributing surplus vaccine, is there much chance that there'll be much surplus vaccine to be redistributed, in your view?
Well, I think countries will be very reluctant to redistribute their surpluses at the moment. I mean, bear in mind AstraZeneca, for example, which is a very stable one, so it lasts a long time. It's easily stored. I mean, people aren't going to give that back easily, you know, when there are still challenges with supply overall. So Johnson & Johnson is coming on stream next week. But by the time that is actually in full production, full swing, it will take some time. So I don't see an awful lot of vaccines being traded on this proposed idea that, you know, wherever the surplus is, that they will be distributed within the European Union.
What about going beyond Europe then? Because several European countries now have taken that step. So, you know, are we trying to be the best boys in the class by playing by the rules here and letting people waiting for their vaccine as a result?
Yeah, but Katie, in fairness, I mean, we're not the worst boys in the class by any chance. I mean, I mean, people are saying, look, I'm not here to defend the government, I'm just here to give the facts. But I mean, like, if you look at Europe and the rollout, Ireland is consistently between third and fifth every week. There's only a few countries ahead of us. Most are well behind us. So we are waiting for that. The point I'm making, we're just waiting for vaccines. What we need to do now is ensure that if we can access more vaccines through other systems.
Sorry to cut across you, Billy Keller, but can you address that question? Should we look beyond? James Lawless, your colleague, has written a memo to the Taoiseach saying that we should perhaps be looking at the Sputnik vaccine and talking to the Russians about that.
Well, I've made the point that we should be looking everywhere for vaccines a number of weeks ago. I mean, we shouldn't just tie ourselves to the European procurement programme and the rollout of the vaccines through the European Commission. We should be looking at all avenues. Now, Sputnik 5 is being used in Hungary. They approved it themselves, their own national competency authority. But, you know, we always wait for the European Medicines Agency to approve a vaccine, and that has not been approved yet. So, I mean, it would be high-risk strategy for Ireland to start approving
to look
vaccine?
They are starting to look at it.
Not Ireland, the European Medicines Agency is.
Yeah.
What about, I see David McWilliams suggesting in the Irish Times today that we should be using our soft power with Joe Biden and, when we're passing over the shamrock, asking perhaps for some vaccine from the US supplies.
Well, look, I mean, the problem here is Moderna is one that's been produced in the United States. There's shortage of Moderna coming to Europe already. So it's not as if, like, you see, people are assuming that there's a surplus of vaccines everywhere. I mean, the difficulty there isn't. You saw recently where Italy stopped 250,000 AstraZeneca vaccines being exported from the European Union to Australia. So there isn't a huge surplus available to countries, and like we have approved Moderna.
But Joe Biden has ramped up production in the States, and he's now talking about having the entire of the United States vaccinated by May.
Yes, but I mean, that's the point, Katie. I mean, countries aren't going to start sharing. Let's be very clear. Countries and governments are going to look out for themselves first.
That's one of the key reasons. That's one of the key reasons why we went in with our partners in Europe, to ensure we had security of supply. Issues have arisen with the AstraZeneca vaccine, but nevertheless, we shouldn't lose sight.
We
will catch up, and I think we've 80 million in total under order.
And Katie, I do think we need to catch up in Ireland. That's clearly what we need to do. But we also need to look at the big picture. This has to be global for it to work. We have to have vaccinations in every country around the globe because people move around the globe. So if people aren't vaccinated everywhere, we have a problem. It's a global issue, and it has to be dealt with in a global context. But apart from that, for us here in Ireland right now, the elderly people, the vulnerable people out there that want to get their vaccine aren't getting it. And that's the issue that we need to deal with.
That's not quite correct,
Martin. Well, it is correct.
In the main, they
are. We wouldn't be here talking about it if it wasn't correct.
There are cases, and I accept that, cases where there's 850 U85s, they will be vaccinated next week.
But if we get additional vaccine, we'll be able to roll it out fast.
Okay, that's it. We're going to leave it there on that issue, and we will take a break and talk about the move by judges to change the guidelines in relation to personal injury awards after these.
Saturday with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the country's judges have voted this morning in favour of proposed new guidelines for personal injury cases. Now, do these guidelines go far enough? And should it be the judges deciding on this in the first place? I'm joined now by Peter Boland from the Alliance for Insurance Reform and Mairead Carey, former journalist and barrister, now a solicitor. Mairead, can I ask you first your reaction to this news today that the judges have, despite some dissent, we understand, decided to go ahead with these new guidelines?
I find it quite troubling, Katie, to be honest. I'm not necessarily surprised. There's been intensive lobbying in recent years, and obviously the insurance company have been demanding cuts in awards of 80%. But this decision affects thousands of people with genuine injuries, and it will affect them now and into the future. It is a very serious decision. It seems to me that it is a decision that should have been made in the Dáil in an open and transparent way where all voices could have been heard, but instead it was made in secret without any consultations by judges behind closed doors. I think it's actually very troubling.
Peter Boland, very troubling, Mairead Carey says there, but you've been campaigning for this for many years. Do we have Peter on the line there?
Yes, hello.
Peter, are you hearing us there?
I am indeed, Katie. Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, Mairead Carey there is saying she's very troubled by this move today to support these.
Well, you're correct in saying that we've been calling them for these for years now because we're in an existential crisis when it comes to insurance costs in this country. And at the heart of it are damages for minor, fully recovered injuries. We had asked the Judicial Council to deliver an average 80% reduction, which, whilst that might sound severe, really only reflects the norms in other European countries and the norms established by the Court of Appeal in decisions over the last number of years. However, early indications would suggest that what we've got instead is about a 52% reduction across a basket of typical minor injuries. So this is nowhere near sufficient. Essentially, what it will do is move it to a situation where our damages are twice as high as in England and Wales. And on whiplash in England and Wales, which accounts for 70% of soft tissue claims, they are moving to much lower levels in May. So we're still completely out of kilter with comparable jurisdictions. And we are today calling on government to take over this situation, as they are constitutionally entitled to do, and cap damages at a level which will make insurance costs sustainable for policyholders.
Are you clear, though? Mairead, if I can bring you back in.
Yes, Katie, just in terms of the English situation there, do you remember, for example, the women who were affected by contaminated blood products in the 80s and the haemophiliacs who contracted hepatitis C and HIV as a result of contaminated blood products? We compensated those people in the 90s. In the UK, there is currently an investigation or inquiry going on to decide whether people who were infected by contaminated blood products should be compensated at all. Why would we want to follow their example? Why would we want to follow their lead?
But the difference between the level of payouts in relation to soft tissue, minor soft tissue injuries, is really eye-watering when you compare our award levels to, in particular, the award levels in England and Wales.
Well, if you take the low-paid worker, and I think this will really impact them, Katie, if you take somebody who's injured at work, for example, or who's injured in a road traffic accident, who has your soft tissue injuries, you know, they're on minimum wage. They're not going to have sick pay. They have to work through their injuries. If they still have back pain in a year's time, they might have been expected to receive about 16,000 in compensation. That was last week's case. Next week, it would appear that they might get as little as 500 euros up to 3,000. On that basis, they won't be able to get legal representation, for example. And what's going to happen then, I think...
Why won't they be able to get legal representation?
Because they won't be able to pay for it. Because PIAB doesn't award costs. Because the money that somebody gets in PIAB pays for the legal representation they now get, and that's not sustainable going forward. But what will happen, I think, is that people in this country have a constitutional right of access to the courts. We have a legal aid system, and they will have to turn to that legal aid system, and they will have to ask for assistance in representing them in those kind of cases. And Katie, it is the taxpayer who will foot the bill for that. It is the taxpayer who will pay for the medical report. It is the taxpayer who will pay for the engineer's report, and it will be the taxpayer who pays for their representation in court when the insurance company decide to fight cases. That's the reality of it. This is another subsidy for the insurance company.
Where
in circumstances where just a year ago, Katie, the insurance company had earnings of 142 million. This is about boosting insurance company profits and let people not be.
But I suppose, Mairead, people will say, listening to you, that it's about boosting. That you would say that, wouldn't you? Because this is personal injury payments and fees are a big part of the income for solicitors and for indeed your colleagues, ex-colleagues in the law library.
But Katie, this is about PIAB claims. If you want to have a personal injury case, you have to take your case to PIAB. You have to take it to the Personal Injury Assessment Board. And they don't award costs. So I'm looking at the Irish Times here, and the Irish Times is telling me now that in cases of minor brain damage or head injury, which haven't recovered within 6 months, people can now expect to get an award of between 500 euros and 3,000. And ask yourself, is that fair?
Okay.
And this affects every injury, Katie. It's not just whiplash cases. It affects the cervical cases just as much.
Peter Boland. There's just some outrageous stuff being wheeled out here. At the heart of this is affordability of insurance for Irish society. And this is the focus has always and rightly been on general damages for minor injuries. Wheeling in issues such as blood product cases back in the 80s and 90s or cervical cancer have nothing to do with minor fully recovered injuries, where we just cannot afford to continue to compensate at the level that we have been compensating.
So it's
a complete red herring.
Can I ask you, Peter, are you confident that this will have an impact on premiums?
As it stands, it will have some impact, and we will call on insurers to react immediately to this, but nowhere near the level of impact that we need in order to make insurance affordable again. Because remember, we're talking about an existential situation here. We were already closing businesses and voluntary and community groups before COVID-19 happened. And if we are to see Ireland recover from COVID-19, either as an economy or as a society in general, we cannot continue to hand out the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that we consistently have on minor, fully recovered soft tissue injuries, because they are just unaffordable by international standards and they're unaffordable here in Ireland.
Okay, Kieran O'Donnell, this doesn't go far enough, Peter Boland says.
I welcome it as a good first step. It's now going to, Helen McEntee as Minister for Justice will bring it to Cabinet next week and look to have it implemented as quickly as possible. This is about striking a balance. We can't have the awards so out of kilter with other jurisdictions of minor injury. Secondly, we must bring premiums down for hard-pressed consumers out there, business and personal. And can I just make one point? We had the insurance companies in before the Finance Committee in 2019. I identified they were making over 100 million of super profits above what they needed to earn. They gave a commitment there publicly, all of them, that if the awards came down, they would reduce their premiums pro rata. I will be holding
pro rata.
pro rata. And I'll be holding. And I unearthed
that. So if the awards come down by 52%, our premiums will come down by 52%.
They're telling me that they will do it pro rata. And I will hold them to that because I forensically went through each of the companies. They were making excessive profits. So they have to play their part as well as the judiciary coming forward now and reducing the rate.
I think first of all, it has to be said, when a person has an injury or has a loss of some kind, whatever it is, and they have insurance, they're entitled to be compensated for it.
Correct.
That's the first thing, and that's a principle that should be there. Now, the difficulty that I have with a lot of this is that the insurance industry always has reasons why the premiums are so high. And there's always the reason is somebody else. It's always the compensation has been paid out is too much. There's fraud. There's this, there's that, there's the other. And when you get in and you actually look at it, in many, many cases, a lot of that is bogus. They continually have dual price and they have, Pierce Doherty has brought legislation in regard to that recently.
And the government has had
action plans for the past 10 years.
No,
but premiums have continued to go up
and
have gone. I mean, I think the premiums in Ireland are probably twice what they are in most other European countries. Now, the payouts for minor tissue injuries is an issue that needs to be dealt with, definitely. But the payouts across the wider scale of it are not that much above other European countries.
We have serious profiteering
by the major insurance companies in Ireland because it's a closed shop, and that needs
to be opened up. I identified that. I know the profits they're making.
Yes.
So it's now up to the insurance companies to show good faith and reduce the premiums per rata.
Well, we need to see those insurance...
Really, Katie, isn't it the situation that they have never shown good faith?
That's exactly the problem.
For example, and that jury trials for personal injury case be stopped, they were stopped and premium didn't come down. When they demanded a personal injuries assessment board to be introduced and it was done, premiums didn't come down.
The government will be holding to account on this.
Excuse me, Katie, I need to clarify that because that's ridiculous. That is incorrect.
Peter Boland.
Yeah, two things from a clarity point of view. First of all, when the Personal Injuries Assessment Board was introduced, motor insurance premiums in this country came down by 42% over the next 8 years and only started to go back up again when the good work done by the Personal Injuries Assessment Board was unravelled by constant legal challenges. And just in terms of clarity on this, and it's very important to note, by far the biggest element of every insurance premium is taken up by compensation. And it is interesting to note that according to the Central Bank, in comprehensive data that we have on the motor sector now, the legal profession take out almost precisely the same amount in fees as insurers do in profits. So clearly there's a lot of money at stake here. There's a lot of income at stake, more to the point. And so positions have been taken on this. But the reality of it is that as it stands with the new guidelines today, say for whiplash minors substantially recovered, which is one of the descriptions in the Book of Quantum, that was fixed at 15,700 in Ireland. It's been reduced now to €6,000.
In England and Wales, it's €4,192, and that's due to drop to €1,400 in May. So it puts us, we will be back to being out of kilter by a factor of four in May.
It's still a significant, drop. I think the most important thing now...
But in relation to the super profits that you talked about there, what is the government going to do about that?
We brought in the Judicial Council bill. One of those was that they had to set up a committee to look at the Book of Quantum, which they've done, and the guidelines. That's now been passed by the Judicial Council, the judges. It's now gone to the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, and government will act at a cabinet meeting on Tuesday. And I think the key thing now is we have to get... What we need to see here now is we need to see the insurance companies coming up and effectively reducing the premiums. That we have to see that. And I accept if someone has had a serious injury, yes, they're entitled to absolute compensation. But there was a situation with the minor injury, we were completely out of kilter with our jurisdiction.
So how long are we going to wait for the premiums to come down? What kind of pressure is going to be applied?
The government have a subcommittee which is chaired by the Taoiseach to Leo Varadkar in terms of an action plan on insurance, 66 actions. I would expect they'll be sitting down and studying the guidelines in great depth, and we will then be looking to ensure that we monitor and ensure the premiums come. And we're also dealing with areas like dual pricing as well.
Let me bring in Verona Murphy on this. Verona, can we look forward to having our insurance premiums halved in the short term?
I would very much hope so. I've been proactively dealing with this issue since 2018 when I actually went to DG Competition in Brussels and asked them to carry out an investigation on exorbitant premiums. But if I can just say, on a positive note, I'm a member of the Regional Technical Group, although I'm independent, that's our group. And basically, we're laying before the Dáil next week a bill, the Civil Liability and Courts Amendment Bill, and that is going to deal with fraudulent claims, whereby currently there is no imposition on somebody who is found to have brought a fraudulent claim. We're asking that effectively, if this bill is passed, and we will be looking for cross-party support, so I'm assuming that Ciarán and Martin and their parties
will see this
as a further enhancement and proactive approach. But what it does, significant costs, and Peter will attest to this, are incurred by individuals and businesses in defending fraudulent claims. And what we're asking in this bill is that there will be, the judges will be at liberty to present that fraudulent case to the DPP that a fine of up to €5,000
This is a priority under the government's action plan and insurance. And I've no doubt when the bill is being brought forward by Verona and our colleagues, government will consider it. Everyone, I think, there's cross-party support. We have to find a way to bring premiums down.
And you're going to support
this
that?
Is one way to
obviously
deal with the
fraudulent
claims.
I can't comment on the contents
here
of the bill until I've seen it.
Yeah,
that's a matter for consideration by government.
There has been a very lackluster approach to fraudulent claims. And most of the time, these claims are struck out or withdrawn and people walk away, but leaving the actual defendant or the insurance with thousands and thousands of euros in legal costs.
Okay, I'm going to have to...
is how we address it.
Okay, on that note, I'm going to have to leave that there. We'll take a break and we'll talk about protesting in a pandemic after these.
Tweet at Saturday RTE.
Now, just before we go to that protest in Cork today, the anti-lockdown protest, that breaking news just as we were coming to air, Ciarán, that the stockbroker Davy has announced that its chief executive, Brian McKiernan, has resigned from his position as CEO, and that the board of the company has also accepted the resignations of Ciarán McLaughlin from his role as non-executive director and of Barry Nangle from his executive role as head of bonds at Davy. And this, of course, follows the recent €4.13 million fine by the central bank arising out of a 2014 bond transaction. Just your reaction to that, Ciarán.
On a personal level, I welcome it. I think that when you see a fine of that magnitude, the company, they've moved. I would like maybe they've moved a bit quicker, but they have moved today. I very much will await, a full statement from Davies themselves. But it's to be welcomed.
Martin?
Yeah, I think it's to be welcomed. It's quite an irony when we see what happens at the higher echelons of the finance industry, and when you go to places like my constituency where you have Bank of Ireland closing branches all over the place, and it just puts people into this, infuriates them that they see the people in the higher echelons of the banking industry actually absolutely ripping everything off and have no care whatsoever for the regulations, and at the same time, when it's on the ground and when people need a bank in their local community, they don't have one. So, you know, it's an irony that we have this happening in the same week that we have the financial industry in this country, you know, just seem to ride roughshod over people and over regulation and over everything else. And I think what happened in Davies was an absolute scandal, and we would wonder, is it a reflection of what's happening in other places as well? And I think there needs to be a proper investigation into all of this kind of behaviour.
Who should be conducting that investigation?
Well, the central bank has conducted the investigation that we had at the previous investigation, and I think they can look further into similar issues.
There are a lot of financial institutions operating out there, providing a lot of employment, and they're going about the way in an orderly way. What happened in Davies is in a different context. And the fact that they've resigned, they should have resigned with immediate effect. The fact that that resignation has taken place is to be welcomed. And when ordinary people out there are looking in, I've no doubt they're furious. But I think I'd like to now see Davies issue an actual detailed statement on this particular matter and what further actions they're taking.
Just on that, there is a statement, I'm told, Mr. McKiernan has said he regrets his role in the transaction and is very sorry for the hurt that it has caused to the reputation of Davy and its people. Like, what else needs to be said?
Well, I think what was required, I'd like to hear a statement from Davies themselves. This is a much wider issue. And I think obviously...
Well, there was obviously a statement published the day after.
No, I'd like to hear from Davies themselves in terms of they clearly requested these resignations. Is there further actions to take place? Is this particular issue concluded? And obviously the central bank would have a further role as well.
Okay, I'm hearing that there is actually a statement from Davies. I think I might be just getting handed it now. Yes, indeed. This is a statement where the resignations have been announced. All three offered to step down subsequent to the recent settlement agreement between Davy and the central bank in respect of its investigation into that bond transaction in 2014. As outlined earlier this week, Davy deeply regrets the shortcomings that emerged from the Central Bank of Ireland's investigation and apologises unreservedly and unequivocally that these failures occurred. And then it quotes John Corrigan, chairman of Davies, as saying, "In accepting their resignations, I acknowledge their substantial contribution to the development of the company over many years. As we reflect on the central bank investigation, our priority now is to restore trust in the integrity and robustness of our control environment and culture, and to ensure we provide our clients with the standard of service and protection that I know our people are committed to." Bernard Byrne, Deputy CEO of Davies, has been appointed interim CEO. This appointment is subject to the approval by the central bank. Is that enough?
I would like them to say that the matter is concluded and to say that these were the only people that were in any way involved in terms of the
final... Well, actually, the final line in that statement is, "Board consideration of the findings of the central bank investigation is ongoing."
Yeah, and I'd like to hear a concluding statement from Davies on it. So the matter is still not concluded. The resignations today... symbolically or hugely and obviously substantially important in terms of for the company itself, for Davies, but for the wider public. But I think we need to, there's obviously further work to be done here by Davies.
Okay, we leave that one there because I just want to touch on what's happening in Cork today, the latest anti-lockdown protest. We were told that it was going to be a peaceful family affair. I understand that it was quiet up until recently. Can we go over to Pascal Sheehy now? Our Southern editor, Pascal Sheehy, is standing by for us in Cork.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Pascal, thanks for joining us. What's happening there at the moment?
Well, the situation is calm here at the moment. About 200 people have gathered for this anti-lockdown protest. It's difficult to know how many of those 200 people are actually attending the protest or just bystanders watching what's going on here. There is a heavy Garda presence. I have been in the city since around 9 o'clock this morning. And if you didn't know that there was a protest planned for later on, you really wouldn't be conscious of much other than a heavier than normal Garda presence. The Garda Public Order Unit is here on Patrick Street at the moment. The Garda Air Support Unit is overhead. Gardaí mounted checkpoints on all of the roads into Cork today. They turned back people who didn't have reasonable reasons to be travelling to the city. The protest is timed for 2 o'clock, and as I say, at the moment, everything is calm.
And again, just on that Garda presence, because we're reading today that this is seen as a dry run, perhaps, for another protest that's planned in Dublin on St. Patrick's Day, and that there is going to be a very significant Garda operation. Is it very visible?
Yes, it's visible. I'm not sure about a dry run for St. Patrick's Day because, Dublin and Cork are very different. And I'm sure the Gardaí would say that this is being policed as an event in itself. Yes, there is a very visible presence on the street here. And you would be conscious of it if you were walking through the city centre from early this morning.
And is everyone wearing masks there and socially distanced?
No, there's a mixture. I'm just looking at the people who've congregated at the moment. Some are and some aren't. And there are certainly instances where people aren't 2 metres distanced from each other.
But they may be related to each other, I suppose, or from the one household. So we can't say.
They may be, but there are lots of... there are knots of people, 2, 3, 4, 5, right. 6 people all together and... gathering here at okay. Patrick Street.
Okay, thanks for that, Pascal. Thanks for that update and take care of yourself. Should people have a right to... I mean, the people are frustrated. Many people are, have their lives turned totally upside down. Should they not have a right to protest in the pandemic?
People have a right to protest. We're in a pandemic. We're asking people to up and down the country, all age groups, who have utterly had to restrict their movements and their lifestyles in terms of public health. So if you've a march like this and it brings about a huge circulation of people and it becomes a major spreader of the virus, then that shouldn't be happening. And I want to compliment on Garda Síochána, because clearly they've done a huge amount of prep work here that has ensured that this has not functioned. And I think the key thing here is about public health.
Okay. That's all we have time for, I'm afraid. The producer today was Mary O'Hagan. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator is Elaine Conlon. And Padraig Carney was on sound. And I want to thank all my guests and my panel. And say from all the team here, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.